Welcome to the Stoic CEO, where we document our journey into business and self-mastery. Hi.
How's it going?
Not bad. How are you?
Very good. Very good.
Good. We've had a little break.
We have?
Yeah. So I think our last episode, we were talking about dopamine and all of the issues we're facing. So aptly, have almost taken a break from
scientific experiment, you know.
Intentional. So we sort of took a break from all sorts of consumption. Well, not as much as we'd like, but we tried. And this has sort of been an indirect impact of that. But we are back now, which is good.
Ready to report back our findings.
Yeah, our findings indeed, and which essentially leads to this episode, which is almost like a part two of the dopamine one. Mm-hmm. But it's what we're calling anti-social media.
Mm-hmm. Which merch is coming soon.
Intriguing term.
Yeah.
So I want to start with sort of recapping the whole information overload things that we've been battling with and the shiny object syndrome that we touched on in the last episode. Do you want to talk about some of your experience over the past couple of weeks?
As it relates to the episode and what we tried? Yeah, absolutely. So naturally, we were in the last episode, we were discussing how there's this propensity to somewhat, in particular during, you know, this pandemic period, to try to reinvent yourself and chase all these, you know, flashing new opportunities and areas of interest. And I feel what we've been trying to do for the last, I would say probably a month now, has been we've tried to narrow down our scope of focus, and we tried to isolate the informational sources that we were previously utilizing. So we've narrowed down the authors, or, you know, in the case of a podcast or YouTube channel, the sources from which we get our information, or in particular books or authors that we've tried to isolate and kind of divvy out a percentage of the combined space and time that we'd usually dedicate to that endeavor to a specific subset of authors.
Yeah, definitely.
And try to dive deeper and derive more value and apply that value or insight into the day to days, rather than hopping from, you know, podcast to podcast, book to book, idea to idea. And yeah, it's been challenging for sure, but it's been incredibly powerful.
Definitely. I think it's worth saying one of the thing driving forces behind this experiment, which is still ongoing, was that I think we were having a random discussion, and I think I brought up on a random fleet of consciousness, I was thinking, do you think we would be more fulfilled and also more successful in what we're trying to achieve, whatever that is, if we repeatedly intake and apply specific sets of knowledge from some people that we know are like world renowned, are classics, are the best, like for example in business we look at Peter Drucker as a timeless voice, as opposed to constantly chasing that shiny object of the next business book and the next self-development,
which is
book,
in essence it's like a regurgitation majority of the time. Like, you know, like 99% of people are like Dale Carnegie and who wrote Think and Grow Rich?
Napoleon Hill.
Yeah, so it's like all the modern self-help gurus are essentially derivatives of, like from your Tony Robbins to your Gary Kellers and Gary Keller to degrees. And then you've got legends like Peter Drucker, Jim Rohn, like those are the, so it's really interesting to kind of go to the source, so to speak.
Yeah, for sure. So this experiment that we've been doing, we focused on Robert Greene and Peter Drucker, but recently Robert Greene. And I think for me specifically, it's been a massive weight off my shoulders and I've really enjoyed it. I'm probably most of the way through one of his books so far, but just knowing that that's the only thing I'm focusing on and not all these other books that I wanted to read that were piling up and stuff, just being able to set that constraint has been very freeing. And I'm absorbing a lot of the knowledge that we're reading from Robert Greene a lot more. And I'm constantly looking at ways of applying them into every day,
yeah,
as opposed to just consuming it for the sake of consuming and for the sake of dopamine.
I mean, the challenge is in case people don't know who Robert Greene is like, Robert Greene's many things. I think he's like a philosopher, historian, dash psychology,
all of
behavioral scientist,
a modern philosopher
kind of guy. So the crux of what I'm trying to get to, and then in Peter Drucker's case, like, these are like very, very well established greats, and they've covered and they've dabbled into every spectrum you can imagine. So by picking, and this is what I found, it's and Robert Greene's got like over what, 10-15 books, and every single book's probably, we get there's a condensed version which is about 200 pages, and there's the normal books are like, you're talking about 800-700 pages, and you're talking end to end, page to page, like, no, there's no pictures and, you know, empty pages. So the challenge with that is that, so what I'm trying to say is, these are like highly sophisticated, well-developed authors who have delved into so many sectors, and just even isolating them, the spectrum that they cover is so vast.
Yeah, and bear in mind, these legends of authors, like, they've condensed decades of their own research and experience into these 200 pages of whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're consuming.
The reason perhaps why we're, I wouldn't say succeeding, but we've had some success with this, is because we've previously have made such a, you know, valiant effort to read as much as we have. We've got somewhat of a baseline for most of the concepts that are being spoken about. And I think what you said there is absolutely correct. I know we went back and forth on, do we, and this is perhaps for the next phase, rather than picking an individual, it's like, do we pick an area of interest, which is something that we're going to get into, and trying to run the greats that basically have something to say on that domain, and utilizing that and running that through that filter. Because I think it's still very difficult when you have someone like a Robert Greene who has a book like 48 Laws of Power, which kind of taps into this spectrum of, like, such a vast spectrum. So I think that was something that was interesting that we noticed that we can perhaps modify and hone into. And I think equally with regards to what you said earlier, the idea of, and I know you said Alain de Botton said something similar, and there's Seneca as well, who I remember reading something, he said, get 5 mentors and make them your mentors essentially for life, or like, where it could be 5 books. So a lot of people would historically, and I've probably been one of them, like How to Win Friends and Influence People is such a great book. That's like up there as one of the greatest books that's ever written. That's like a linchpin kind of book.
Yeah.
So I think it's very important to get 5-10 books like that, and then really internalize it and apply it through everyday application to every, you know, area of your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, ultimately, I know for myself anyway, but it's something that we've discussed multiple times, but we are consuming so much, right? And it's not like we're sitting there binge watching like random shit or just on social media scrolling forever. Like, we're consuming valuable information and valuable knowledge. However, it's just too much. Like, it's just that shiny object syndrome and the dopamine overload. I feel like we are constantly, in the words of Alain de Botton, he said, for those who don't know, Alain de Botton is, again, a very modern philosopher, writer, and he founded the School of Life, which is a really famous, like, modern school online. And he says that we are spending more time thinking about how many books we're reading as opposed to what we're actually learning and what we're applying to our lives. And he says that we feel exhausted from all this learning, yet we feel so underread, and we constantly feel underutilized, and we're underapplying all this knowledge.
Yeah.
So it's just a cognitive dissonance there that I've personally been feeling so much recently.
Yeah.
And it's kind of got me disenfranchised with the whole industry as a whole.
Yeah.
Because there's just too much, and you can't do what you want to with them.
Yeah. And I mean, there's an element that we also spoke about, which is almost a nefarious somewhat. It's difficult because I wouldn't say it's the social mediaification of knowledge and books, but there seems to be this insidious kind of encroachment of and I've been guilty of it myself, of individuals trying to glamorize the fact that they're reading so many books, yeah. and demonstrating that, and by the mere fact of photographing books or passages or chapters, trying to display it. It's almost like a value, it's like a virtue signal of like, yeah. of and it's that scene in when we were discussing in Good Will Hunting, where, and for those of you who don't know, I won't spoil it because it's not a major scene, but it's a very fascinating scene where he's in the bar and there's this, you know, the ponytail, yeah. you know, the blonde guy with a ponytail, and he's like spilling all this philosophy and everything, and he's just passing it off as his own. And obviously he's,
yeah,
is his name Will?
I think so, yeah.
And we'll go with Will. And Will, just obviously the guy's a genius, he's a super genius, and he's obviously read a lot of these works, and he just basically confronts the guy and just exposes him, and he's like, so basically everything you're quoting is this person's da 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 da. And he's got the capacity, because he's obviously already read and he's got photographic memory, so he's able to like basically pitch back, be like, well, that's not your idea, that's someone else. Mm. Da, 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 da. He goes, have you got anything that is your own? And the guy's completely like, just like, he was being like a complete douche, and he's just left exposed. And I think we are living in an era where, and we'll touch on this, is that essentially it's becoming a lot more a case of who's saying something rather than what's being said.
Mm.
And it's a very difficult thing, because I find myself, I get the imposter syndrome myself, because I historically for the last 2-3 years always take on occasion pictures of the Daily Stoic, and I put it up, and I notice the trend of many others starting to do the same thing.
Mm.
And it's just that notion of which you said, which is really interesting, it's that, are we reading for the sake of reading, to say that we're reading, or are we reading to try and, you know, stand on the shoulder of these giants who have, like you said, condensed 10 years of knowledge, and utilizing that for a purpose, you know, and actually actioning and executing that to progress either ourselves, our lives, our, you know, the people around us, or in business, in our businesses, and actually making the world a better place. And I feel like the greatest respect that you can probably pay an author is probably taking what they're saying and their principles and applying it and building on top of that.
Definitely.
Does that make sense? Because in essence, you're immortalizing that subset of knowledge, and you're passing that on, and it just lives on forever through them.
100%. And I think we've fallen victim to this like multiple times before, of like taking pride in how many pages we've read or how many books we've read in a year, for example.
How many podcasts we've listened to, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just completely against why we're doing that in the first place.
Absolutely, yeah.
So now that we sort of realize that, we're sort of checking that, I just feel a lot more empowered, and I feel like it's having a massive relieving impact, and it prevents that analysis paralysis of just constantly consuming knowledge but then not knowing what to do. So it's a bit of a paradox in that you need to consume less in order to do more. But I completely agree. And to touch on your point of, we care more about who says something as opposed to what's being said. I think that the downfall of that with today's society, with social media, is now that who's saying something is no longer this person's relevant because they have decades of experience and they're renowned. It's because they have 1 million followers.
Yeah.
And any Tom, Dick and Harry can get followers, but yet they do have influence, and now we're believing what they're saying, even though there could be no backing to what they're saying.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we were talking about the psychology of it, and I think it's a fascinating thing to delve into, and I don't want to get too... Actually, I'm going to get into it, so strap up. It's almost like when you look at... If you look at evolutionary biology, right? Humans, like humanoids, so we've obviously... We left the tree, so to speak, and we started forming little tribes, and we've obviously spoken about that before, and... The whole thing about of forming tribes that are essentially 100 to 150 strong, and then you got hierarchical structures that build based on that, because you kind of base on competency, because it's a matter of survival. And naturally, in today's day and age, a lot of the things that previously posed a threat to survival and reproduction, which is the two critical driving factors for any animal, are somewhat, I guess, conquered. Like, we're no longer, we don't wake up thinking that, oh crap, I need to go and hunt food and make sure I've got enough to eat so I survive. We don't wake up thinking, God, like there could be a saber-toothed tiger or a bear or something like that that's going to attack me. There's not going to be a, you know, a tribe of other warriors that are going to invade my territory and rape my kids and kill me off. Does that make sense? Because we've got law and order, we've got supermarkets, we've got...
Yeah.
We've pretty much... We are the prime, you know, we are the apex of the hierarchy. We've pretty much wiped out all the saber-toothed tigers and there are no bears around unless you're in probably Canada or something. So I think interestingly, but the psychology and that archetype is still in our DNA. Yeah. And it's very interesting to see how social media has kind of hijacked those
100%.
Those critical ingrained, what they called,
triggers essentially.
So you've got these underlying models, and there's not model. The word I'm looking for is not coming to me. It's essentially these systems that essentially have been ingrained and evolved for thousands of years. And the problem of the nefarious nature of social media is that previously it made sense. So if you were the tribal chief, right, of your tribe, that kind of meant that you had a following, right, and you had your voice had clout. But that was a kind of meritocratic clout, because it was based on, well, our tribal chief has kept us alive, he made us move to this location and we had more food, or he fended off those other villagers that tried to take us over. So it was kind of very much based on meritocracy. In today's day and age, because you don't necessarily have that, the problem is that when someone can game and hack the system, right, in various ways, and accrue a following, and basically tap into the very primal and irrational nature of humanity, whether it's through sex or whether it's through power, money, and they basically demonstrate something. They can accrue this following or this clout, and we naturally perceive that cloud or that blue tick to come with meritocratic
authority.
Yeah. Does that make 100%. Sense? And that's such a dangerous thing, because then that's where you get the phenomenon of it becomes a lot more of who's saying something as opposed to what is being said, because it's no longer a meritocratic process. It's no longer on actually what are the credentials of this individual, what is the years of research, or you know the tried and tested proof of what they've achieved. It's a case of like, shit, look, a lot of people are listening to this guy, they're following him, so he must know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And I think that's why you're seeing a lot of cracks in today's society at large, whether it's with not just social media, you see it in normal traditional media, and you can see the cracks forming, because people are becoming very, very distrusting of previously organized organizations that held clout and had meritocratically accrued it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that's, like, obviously that was a very long-winded way of explaining it, but I think it's a fascinating insight to kind of look at.
Yeah, 100% agree. And there's actually a cognitive bias that we have off the back of that as well, which is colloquially referred to as the authority bias. I don't know what the technical term is.
Ah, interesting.
And it's, so in the book, Thinking Fast and Slow, which is probably one of my favorite reads ever.
Still need to read it.
Yeah, I can't.
It's really one of those books. It's like, what's Robert Greene? The Laws of Nature. Like, there's some books that you have and you just look at them and you're like, not today.
It's just too scary.
What's that book that everyone talks about? The Peace and War, or War and Peace. War and Peace.
Oh. The longest book in history.
Yeah. Cool. But yeah, sorry. Yeah, you were saying.
Yeah. So Thinking Fast and Slow breaks down all of our cognitive biases. Daniel Kahneman.
Yeah, that's it.
And Avos Tversky or something. The two behavioral economists. So that book has won a Nobel Prize for like how groundbreaking it was, and it goes into all our different cognitive biases, for example, anchoring and priming, that I'm sure everyone's heard about. But yeah, so one of them is authority bias, and essentially it was backed by scientific studies that showed that, for example, if you perceive someone in a position of authority, you're likely to basically take what they say as true.
Yeah.
So a lot of examples it gives is, for example, if you come across a doctor, or if your boss at work, for example, who's maybe your line of work is banking, let's say hypothetically, and he's your boss, he's the president of the bank.
He must know what he's talking about, yeah.
And then he comes out and says, yeah, like, you shouldn't eat that way, it's unhealthy. You're going to believe it, even though where he is has nothing to do with his knowledge on eating and nutrition.
It's the Bill Gates syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can imagine, like, if Elon Musk tomorrow tweets that meat is bad for you, best believe we're going to have millions of new vegans in the world. Like,
yeah.
That's authority bias.
Yeah. Like, what, just frightening.
Exactly. What they're saying has no relevance to what they actually have meritocratic power over.
Yeah.
So that's the cognitive bias that we all have because of all that evolutionary psychology that you just
And it described. Makes sense why that is hardwired. Hardwired is the word I was looking for earlier. But it makes sense why it's hardwired within us, because the human brain has so much to do, right? There's so much energy. Like, the human brain probably makes up 1/50th of your body's mass, but it takes 1/4 of
the energy.
Of the energy. And if you think the amount of complex processes that, from keeping you alive to breathing to running, so many different processes, whether it's your prefrontal cortex, whether it's your, like, there's so many processes that go on. So it makes sense for a functioning civilization or a society to develop a meritocratic overriding policy, essentially, right? Because it's not in your best interest to question the doctor, presumably, if he's put in the time and done his due diligence and knows what he's talking about. Because the amount of time wasted for you to go and discover whether what he's saying is true or not is detrimental to your survival and to the common progress and survival of the group, right? So you can kind of understand how that is kind of, the authority bias is kind of essentially ingrained in us, right? So, and I know that's the same with policing, with doctors, because you just anticipate, like, this guy has gone through the training and the government wants the best for me. So that, of course, what they're saying is true. Mm. And I think, A, there's naturally going to be some bad eggs. And if anyone knows anything about government, it's that it usually gets, it's not even government, it's power. Like, absolute power corrupts absolutely. But the difficulty comes into the spectre that you said, where a person may have an area of expertise in a certain realm and they've grown a following and clout for that purpose. And then they step in and they start encroaching in other areas, which is like Bill Gates started Microsoft. And listen, if you like, whether you think what he did with DOS and whatever, like, again, he did well with Microsoft and we don't need to get into the history of it. But his sphere of competency is computers, programs, softwares. You have to almost have the ability to critically think and be like, okay, so now this individual is kind of advising me on the climate, on what to eat, on 100 different things. And I don't want to, like, you know, isolate. And this is obviously a key example of an individual. And I think that often happens with children in a family, when the parent who has no authority or lived experience or any kind of experience to kind of comment on something. And I think that's where it gets problematic, where you put a lot of emphasis and power in who's saying something as opposed to what is being said.
100%. And yeah, like you said earlier, the modern society combination of that is social media. Someone that has a large following, they can say something they know nothing about, but yet we all instinctively believe it. And I think that's really dangerous, and, like, nothing irks me more than that about social media, but it is very dangerous.
Yeah.
And you see it on a small scale with, like, for example, someone who is in good shape, then advertising fit tea, for example.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that tea is what got them in that good shape, whereas they're selling that
tea. It definitely doesn't mean the fit. I can comprehensively say that, yeah.
But then they sell that to you and you think, oh, they've got a good body. They've got a large following. Mm. They're selling this to me. Therefore, if I get this, I will be that. And that's fundamentally wrong. So that's on a smaller scale. And on a bigger scale, it could be someone, again, like an example of Elon Musk saying you shouldn't do X, Y, Z. Mm. And then even though he might not know anything about that, he's just voicing his opinion and we instinctively believe it. And that might be something very life-changing for someone.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think that's the biggest problem.
What would you say? What would you say could be a possible solution? And if there is no such thing, what could the individual do to be more critically aware? Because I think what we've obviously discussed prior to this part is that it's essentially impossible for someone to individually acquire, you know, a substantial level of knowledge base to have an opinion, have an informed opinion on everything in life. It's just impossible because we've attempted it in a small subset and we already fallen by the wayside. So what would you say could be some solutions potentially for that?
I mean, if I had the full answer to that, I'd be in a very different place. Mm. But I think the best approach is, I know we often preach self-awareness, but it's almost the flip side of that. It's like external awareness of like knowing that other people have their flaws, mm-hmm. and sort of being aware that someone's saying something that doesn't necessarily mean it's true. So being a critical thinker.
Absolutely. So absolutely agree.
So I think one thing you can fall back on is what actually is their expertise. Like, for example, when we're reading Peter Drucker, we know his expertise is 50, 70 years of business mastery, right? So if he's advising something about business, like, it's a pretty safe, not even gamble, it's a pretty safe decision to listen to what he's saying, right? Mm-hmm. That's standing on the shoulders of giants. Mm. However, if Bill Gates comes out tomorrow and advertises Fit Tea to get in shape, then think critically and think, okay, that's not his area of expertise, therefore maybe I shouldn't believe that. Mm. At the most, maybe I'll accept that and do a little experiment and see if it works for me, and if not, then I'll accept that he was lying or he was misinformed or whatever. And I think that's the best approach you can take.
Yeah.
Can you think of anything else?
It's interesting because two or three days ago, the Daily Stoic came up with the page, I think it was Trust But Verify. And I think Ronald Reagan kind of led his campaign during his presidency with kind of Trust But Verify. And I think that's a really, really powerful, essentially, filter, which lines up incredibly well with the critical thinking and self-awareness. Because I think they're essentially, we've always said awareness is freedom, right? And awareness is the most critical thing that you can have as an individual and a part of a larger collective. So I think that's the number one starting point, which is awareness. And then critical thinking is, I think, a lost skill, because essentially we used to go to education was supposed to represent critical thinking, especially higher education, right? Because you get past like learning the multiplication table and photosynthesis and blah, blah, blah. You get to the higher levels, which is kind of like, now, can you have the capacity to explain ideas and formulate your own and question things? And I think that's more and more becoming lost, and we're becoming kind of automatons where we're kind of forced to think a certain way and say a certain, you know, say things a certain way and all kind of becoming very much robotic in our thinking, right? So it's almost like algorithmic in a sense, right? So it's almost like an algorithm has been written of what society represents today, and you kind of have to conform to all these ideologies. So I think critical thinking is absolutely the second step. I think the third one, which will be Trust But Verify, which is powerful. I think there are methods, like you said, in the Peter Drucker example, is that you've got someone that essentially, he's got 50, 70 years, you know, he's got the business chops, right? He's worked with these things, but not even that in itself can, in my opinion, be a green pass, but you kind of can afford to trust that. Yep. But then it's up to you to still verify that, right? But I think there are like certain situations where it's that line, right? Like, where do you draw that line, that surrogation line of like, do I trust this person to even have the experience to have an opinion on this? And I think that's critically important to do that, because an advice that I remember reading when I was very young, and I think it was a realization that I had when I was growing up, because, and I think loads of people had this when they were younger, and I'm sure you have, when you're really young, you assume that adults know what the fuck they're talking about, right? And they got their shit together and they're competent, and you look at your mom and you look at your dad and you're like, yeah, fuck, they're my heroes, like, they're amazing. And as you get older, you start, and I think part of your teenagehood and adolescence is, in essence, discovering that you don't necessarily agree, and that rebellion, you know, that the rebellious period that you kind of go through. And I think that's in part ingrained within us, because we're obviously archetypally trying to distance ourselves from the loving mother and the, you know, the vengeful father, or what, you know, the Freudian kind of dialects. So I think it's critical to remember that, and the moment you get into the real world, you understand that most people don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah.
And the problem with social media and these forms and media in general is that they congregate authority through numbers.
Mm.
And because that's become easier and easier to do, and there's and they've mastered the triggers, the psychological cues and the dopamine and the addictions to kind of multiply yeah. that, you have to be really, really careful on things like that.
Absolutely. It's so dangerous.
Yeah. So I think the critical thing to do is be very wary of everything and focus on the areas that you believe that are high impact, right? So I think there are certain things, like there are certain things that matter more in a long term.
Mm.
So listening to someone that really doesn't know what they're talking about, or they seem to have the clout, but you're doubtful when it comes to like something like health or your relationships and things that are really like important, yeah. be extra, extra 100%. Careful with that.
Extra cautious, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If someone recommends a shit book, you lost 2-3 hours. That's you can get over that. If someone's got you going on a diet, like you said, with a fit tea and you're damaging things that are physical, mental, and spiritual and emotional, like those are the things you should be a little bit more mindful of. So I think everyone needs to kind of be aware enough to kind of be like, okay, so where are the key foundational areas in my life that I want to preserve as much as possible, and make it your mission to go and find individuals and that you can verify, that you can read about, and you can verify their content yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then apply that in your life and see if it's applicable.
Definitely. I think that does tie back towards our original point of like the Alain de Botton concept of what he phrases like, why are we reading? And I think that resonated with me so strongly, because he essentially says like, moving away from we're reading for reading's sake or to increase the numbers or whatever, we should be reading, especially when it comes to self-improvement and that side of things, maybe not so much fiction because that's more of an entertainment thing, which is fine. But for self-development, why are we reading is to learn a applicable skill, right?
Yeah.
So like you said, identify what is the skill that you need to learn in your life right now. What are you trying to apply? And then go find the top 2, 3, 5 like most renowned names in that thing that you can verify, because mm-hmm. they have the years and years of experience and you know what their actual real world clout is,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just followers or whatever. And then study that theme of reading, of content or whatever. So it's very intentional with how you consume.
100%. I'm really glad they use that word, because it comes down to you have to start moving more towards curation as opposed to consumption.
Yeah, exactly. Curation over consumption.
And I think that's okay. and I think that's essentially the most critical thing.
Absolutely. Right. And I think one of my favorite ever Tim Ferriss episodes is when he interviews Drew Houston, who's a co-founder of Dropbox. And he was saying how he took this approach. Like Dropbox is obviously a multi-billion pound company right now. But when he started there, he was like, I had no clue about business. I had no clue about anything. All he did was, for example, when he needed to learn about marketing, he was like, okay, I'd go find the best 5 names of marketing, like your Seth Godin's or whatever, and I'd study their books, and then I'd learn it and apply it. Yeah. Then I needed to learn about recruitment, so I went and essentially hired the writers, the best writers out there, on recruitment, on building teams, on leadership, etc. Yeah. And I studied those things and applied it. So yeah. It's very intentional. It's very much curating that. And we have even more power now because we can curate YouTube, we can curate our Instagram.
Yeah, everything's at the click of a button. And it's fascinating how, if you look at it from a opportunity perspective, like we've never been in a more rich and abundant environment where so much is readily available. But I think the difficulty is the informational pollution that you've got, and this notion of the loudest people 100%. Being heard the most, which is, and I think that's systematically an issue for not just an individual, but for society at large. Because if you don't have a system that values the quality of an idea over the volume of 100%. Support for an idea, that is problematic. Does that make sense?
100%.
I mean, you're literally building things on very wobbly foundations, and and I think critical thinking is at its core the notion of reading and thinking for yourself. Does that make sense? So you're not just naturally adopting, you know, the group identity or the group think of your friends or the school or the environment that you happen to be in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, and it's really interesting because I think Ricky Gervais he made a really good point, and everyone knows Ricky Gervais is an atheist, and it was with regards to religion. And he was talking about, isn't it incredibly convenient that the kid that's born in Saudi Arabia happens to be born in the right religion? It's just so amazing, right? Like, born anywhere else and you'll be like born in Canada, born in the United Kingdom, or like born in India, you would be going to hell. You'd be going to hell. But you just happen to be born in the right religion. And I think, I'm not trying to get into religion as a topic, but I'm just trying to say that you have to be aware of geography, or, and obviously now geographical things are getting removed by being online, but the tribe and the environments that you're hanging out with in, and questioning, like, is this something that I've actually looked at, or is just this something that happens that everyone's kind of saying? So I'm just going to regurgitate the whole thing. And when you're living in the, you know, 15-second story and quick BuzzFeedy kind of tappy like quick little video, quick little caption. When you're living in that kind of information where everything's like coming at you 100 miles an hour, it becomes even more imperative to curate the sources from which you're getting that information for. And if you're going to be exposed to it, just make it your mission to double check it. Like, if you see this title, oh, this person did this stuff, look deeper.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree. So I think that is the essence of this whole concept of this episode. So there's two aspects. There's one, curation over consumption, and the other is critical thinking, which they go hand in hand. But that's the two things that you need to overcome this. And again, to reiterate that, why do we consume? What? My microphone just fell. Why do we consume? Why do we read? Ultimately, it's in this world, it's for potential. I know in a previous episode, we talked about money as potential. This is like knowledge as potential. So if you're not consuming something that you intentionally sought out to consume because you want to apply it and gain new potential, then you're just doing it for the sake of dopamine. And that's the downside we can all fall into, I think, and what we need to avoid.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, so I kind of wanted to expand on this notion of curation, which we, to bring it one, you know, 360 back to where we started. So we obviously have been attempting to become more cognizant and aware and intentional with the curation of the kind of content or the information that we're consuming. Any kind of changes you've made other than the fact that, other than the obvious limitations that we kind of collectively decided to put on ourselves, or any kind of suggestion that you could have for anyone that could be out there listening? Like, how would you, because I know even outside the other day, you were kind of saying, you know what, I've got a real strong craving to have like a physical newspaper that can be my go-to source. You obviously named The Times, which is a little bit suspect.
I have done now. So I've subscribed to The Economist and I've been reading that this week, which is really interesting. So yeah, so one of the tactics that I've used is...
That's definitely anti-social media, man. Going back to newspapers.
So rather than listening to or hearing the loudest voice and all the noise on whoever wants to speak on Instagram, on Twitter, on wherever, whoever wants to write an article, etc., etc., I thought, okay, let me go for something that's got a higher barrier to entry. So let me find something that is naturally curated, that is editorial. So that was the conversation we were having, and I've since subscribed to The Economist, and I'm only reading that now for news, for politics, for stuff, etc., on that side of things. And it's been really, really relieving so far. I'm really liking it. So that's one thing I would suggest, in that try and find a way to pick something that does have a higher barrier to entry. So don't just consume anything that anyone wants to say, which platforms like Instagram and stuff allow people to do.
Twitter in particular, Twitter.
Yeah, so look for things that are harder to do, essentially. Another thing is, if there is too much noise and you don't know where to start, this is sort of the tactic that I always fall back to, which is just strip everything away. Like, go get off social media for a couple of weeks. That will often give you the empty space in your mind that you need to be able to start thinking, okay, now that I've stopped reacting to all this noise, where do I intentionally want to curate my environment?
Yeah.
And that's been one of the biggest keys for me, I think, and something I constantly come back to almost every month now.
Yeah.
How about yourself?
Yeah, I think very valid points. There's something that intuitively you do really well, and to some degree I've now internalized as well, which is almost create two parts of yourself, right? So you almost want to perceive this devil's advocate positioning within yourself, right? Absolutely. And have that ability to always set a counterpoint or see a counter argument for something that you stand for. And I think the problem with social media also is, in particular with Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and because nowadays the big tech companies have got so much clout and power, to they can kind of discern what ideas are propagated, the algorithms are feeding the loudest people, the ones that get the most clicks. So if you're intentionally aware of that, right, and you have to understand, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, the reason that these platforms are free yet worth billions is that you're the commodity, right? So we've kind of, so if that is your starting point, right, is that for you to understand your attention, your focus, your clicks, your minutes scrolling, watching, reading is currency.
Yeah,
they're literally converting that through advertising and through other platforms to financial gains, right? So that's the base point, base premise to kind of go from. But the moment you understand that is trying to, any idea that you may have or any position or ideology that you may have, either seek out the opposite viewpoint or try and present the opposite viewpoint and try to like strawman your own positions and your own arguments and your own beliefs and be like, okay, so why do we think that? And I think that you do that really incredibly well whenever we've done any kind of consulting work or strategy work, which is kind of like, okay, so our implicit bias suggests that X, Y, and Z, but what could be a counter argument? What could be something that we're missing? If we wanted to poke holes at this argument, where could that be? And the answer always happens to be in the middle.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? 100%. It's never that clear. It's never like completely white or black. Do you know what I mean? There's in today's day and age, with everything being so you know, heated and politically and sensitive and polarized, I think the actual value and the gems and the tangibles are in the nuance, isn't in the details, and you'll become a far better thinker and a far better individual or business person or whatever that may be, if you can hold both sides and see them equally and make a decision given on both perspectives, as opposed to like being stuck in this echo chamber and, you know, just trying to blow on your trumpet the loudest. Because you, and I think that's in essence what that comes down to is essentially being prudent. And I know our boy Ty Lopez, which he's got questionable marketing methods, but he said something really profound on the Impact Theory episode that probably 3 years ago, but it's always stays with me. And he essentially discussed how critical prudence is. And what prudence essentially is the ability to self-correct, right? So it's everyone's kind of born, and oftentimes it's either parental or societal or education system that gives you this kind of moral compass when you're young, right? It's this ideology set of like what's right and wrong and what's possible and isn't. And it's critical that as you're growing and developing and maturing in society, it's to kind of always be aware that you're kind of, and we discussed this earlier, kind of be aware that this compass was pretty much pre-programmed. A lot of the thinking, like 99% of what you believe and what you stand for, isn't your own thinking, although it feels like it. So being able to be critical about that and self-reflect on that, and it's something that obviously the likes of Jordan Peterson, Sam Harris, and all the greats advocate, it's incredibly, incredibly powerful.
I completely agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think what you just triggered something in me. Like Aristotle has a really good quote that I'm obsessed with. I always used to love it, and I've kind of fallen out of touch with it, but he always said that the mark of an intelligent mind is being able to entertain an idea without accepting it.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of like you've got this idea or whatever it is, entertain it and then poke holes at it, trust but verify, and then when you have verified, then you can accept it.
Yeah.
And it's just that sort of middle layer that I think is so key.
And it's really interesting because we've, again, this is something else that we've discussed, is that I think in today's day and age, with everyone being so, I don't know, elated, excited, so passionate, polarized, and there's many other words I can use, but like we'll go with those. It almost seems like ideologies have been convoluted with identity, right? So if you believe and you stand for something, if someone challenges you to question that or see something else, people feel like you're attacking my identity. Yeah, and it's beautiful because the quote by Aristotle is like, it's in essence what it's trying to tell you is like, hold an idea as an idea. That's all it is. It's a concept, and it could be an ideology, it could be a religion, it could be a belief, it could be whatever it may be. Just try to hold it away from yourself and allow a distance to be created between yourself and the idea, right? And if you're able to do that, your temperament will be far more stable. You'll be much better attuned at critically thinking and evaluating the position. But I think the moment that at the moment, so many people are, and myself included, you get so passionate, and you and right now, like I said, because of the conversation before, dopamine, because of these platforms and these videos and these media companies have become so effective and efficient at, you know, like kidnapping your neurotransmitters, dopamine and oxytocin and serotonin. They've literally got the smartest people in the world hijacking your internal emotional drivers. Does that make sense? So you have to kind of, the only defense that you possibly can have is create that distance. Don't get too close to any idea, irrespective of how true you believe it is. Always keep it at an arm's length. Play it, like have the devil's advocate, question it, poke holes at it, and be willing to change your mind. And I think Jordan Peterson, and there's a lot of people that said this quote, and it's very true, is like, the purpose in life is not to be right, it's to try and be less wrong. Does that make sense? Because no one's ever going to figure out, because everything's always changing, right? There's loads of things that 100 or 200, 1,000 years ago was completely common practice that now we know, like, oh yeah, maybe that's not cool, we shouldn't do that anymore. Because so the consciousness of society is constantly adapting and changing with whims of time, right? So it's critical for you to equally be aware of that. Yeah,
I completely agree. There's not much more to add to that. Like, I think that is literally encapsulating everything. Like, you need to have that critical thinking. You need to detach from the idea and be able to poke holes at it and straw man it, and only accept it once it's verified. I think that is the key.
I think to a degree, the funny thing is we probably do it to the extreme. We probably lean a little bit to the other side.
100%.
And there's often times where we do a U-turn and come back to an individual, we're like, oh, we wrote him off, but this guy clearly, he's like, and I know Tom Billy was one of them. We were like, this guy's bait. And we had to literally come back. And I think that's testament to it. And I think it's critical to do that. And I don't think, and this is going to sound controversial, and I wouldn't necessarily just apply this. Although I'd say, I suggest start with this, but I wouldn't necessarily just apply it just to social media or general media. Course, I would apply it to
everything.
Close circles, friendship, family.
100%.
You got to get to a place where you're like, listen, because it's going to sound controversial, but most best friends are best friends purely based on geography.
Yeah.
Like, they happen to be born in Mill Hill or South London, and their best friend was born there, and they went to the same school, and based on the selection and proximity and loads of serendipitous events, they happen to be best friends, which comes down to love and various other aspects. But like, if your quest, which ours is, and we'd like to elevate this quest for mastery, right? Self-mastery, which is becoming the best version of yourself that you can possibly be, then you should apply that to every facet of your life. So if you are living in a family that's extremely toxic, perhaps backwards in their thinking or from a different ideology, it's again creating that space and becoming cognizant of what you like to be, awareness, and curating the kind of individual's information and energy, and you can go that, you know, again, fill up with whatever word you want, and curating your own experiences and narratives, which we'll probably do an episode on the whole of like writing your own story and having your own narrative.
Yeah, definitely. And I think to wrap up, like the it's not an easy thing to do to have this sort of thing, to curate instead of consume, and like we constantly struggle with it because
it's impossible.
Yeah, it feels good to consume, like whether you're consuming a Netflix show or Instagram or self-help books, like it's all consumption, as we talked about in the last episode.
Yeah,
it's still a form of escapism, it's still a comfortable feeling of learning in theory but not curating it so you can apply something specific. It's a difficult thing to do, but I think that's why it's so important, because it can transform your life. And I think that's the key of, again, going back to the question of why do we read, why do we consume, it's to aim for and to pursue transformation as opposed to pursuing information.
Yeah.
I think that's the key distinction to make, which is not easy, and we're constantly struggling with it.
Yeah.
But I know I can speak for myself and probably for you too, but the more we are moving towards this, like the changes are vast, and it's changing everything.
Absolutely.
Yeah. As well as making everything more fulfilling as well.
Yeah. I mean, and as you were saying that, I think the historical precedent is so high. Like when you look at history and whether it was cigarettes, whether it was thalamidine, like which was the mercury derivative that it was in, I think it was basically it deformed little children in pregnancy. Thalamidine, I think it's thalamidine. essentially, what I'm trying to say is historically, doctors would go in front of Congress and say cigarettes are the best thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if you know anything about Mad Men and that kind of era. So, and slavery was fought for hundreds of years, right? There's so many things that previously were arduently believed. Like people believed that the Renaissance legends, like Michelangelo and Leonardo, they were underground. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
because it was so taboo to say some of the stuff they were saying, like the whole notion of the earth moving around the sun, as opposed to the sun, the sun around the earth, as opposed to the earth around the sun. Like there's so many, the history is just incredibly, it's peppered with example after example after example of generally sworn on consensuses that were just completely wrong. Does that make sense? So if social media does anything, or media does anything, it highlights that to an even greater degree. So it's even more important, for not just for your own sake, for the survival of society and humanity as a general, just to be a critical thinker.
100%.
Because that's where the innovation is going to be done, right? Questioning, why is this being done a certain way? Why, like everyone's going right.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to trust but verify, but actually I think it might be left.
Yeah.
That's where the greatest innovations happen, right? That's why Blockbuster never wanted to change their business model. And you know, Mark Randolph and Hastings came about, Reed Hastings, and they're like, okay, cool, we'll do something else. And I think it's that's so easily accepted. And I think that's such a point example of how it can easily be applied to yourself and in your thinking.
100%. So critical. I won't add another quote of the day, because I think we've quoted enough things today. So I'll just reiterate the Aristotle one of, it's the mark of an intelligent mind to be able to entertain an idea without accepting it. So ensure that you trust but verify everything you take, don't fall under authority bias, and maintain critical thinking. I think that's the key.
Thank you for listening to another episode of The Stoic CEO.
If you enjoyed this episode, follow us on Instagram at stoic.ceo and rate and review the podcast and leave your feedback. It would be much appreciated.
Catch you next time, guys.
Catch you next time. I'm